be warned. Su'ura knew that something was not quite right about their escape, but was too exhausted and too busy trying to keep the rest of the survivors together to consider the matter. Her injuries were taking their toll, and only with Ileana's aid could she keep moving. Su'ura glanced at her companion and saw that the other Night Elf also seemed troubled. While certainly not easy, the defenders' flight should have been much, much harder. However, there was nothing they could do but keep moving and hope that they had indeed managed to evade their pursuers. The survivors had to reach Commander Haldrissa. She peered over her shoulder. Smoke rose from the outpost. The goblin's mist had finally faded to nothing this far west, and so she had a good view of the black plumes rising over the trees. The impossible has happened. Silverwing has fallen. The dread words repeated themselves over and over in her head. Silverwing has fallen. Su'ura feared that Ashenvale itself would be next. His warriors were chafing to hunt down Silverwing's remaining defenders, but Garrosh wanted the Night Elves to escape. It was all part of his grand strategy. Briln and the other officers joined him. The former mariner had proven himself worthy in combat, and the war chief gave him a nod. Briln grinned. Silverwing is ours, Garrosh declared with immense satisfaction. The others around him cheered. Warriors beyond them took up the cry. The cheer became a single word, or rather, name. Over and over the warriors shouted out, Garrosh! Garrosh! The survivors'll tell him what happened, Briln mentioned when the cheering had finally died down. The Alliance will have many more fighters when they come to avenge Silverwing. They'll be ready for blood. Garrosh grinned. Good. Let them send 1,000 fighters. 10,000. He waved Gore Howl over his head, the axe keening. The other orcs looked with admiration upon the fabled weapon. Let them send all the warriors the Alliance has. The war chief eyed the carnage he had wrought. It will just mean more of them will die. Chapter 20. Departures. Welcome, Chandris, Tyranda greeted as the general entered the chamber where the High Priestess and the Archdruid had been in grave discussion concerning the events in Ashenvale. I understand that the readiness of the first expedition is imminent. The general bowed her head. The Mother Moon makes my network look slow and inefficient. All is as you say. We will be able to leave shortly. Malfurion did not look pleased with this news. I should have never agreed that you take command of the expedition, Tyranda. I am the one who will go.
No. Elun has decreed that this is my path. It pains me that we will be apart. But in the vision I saw myself there, and you here, and knew it the right thing.
He grimaced. The path of the druid sounds easier and easier when I listen to things such as this. Two attendants entered the chamber from another room behind Tyranda. They carried her armor.
I would certainly beg to differ, Mal. If I never have anything to do with the Emerald Dream again, I will be very pleased about that.
All is in readiness, mistress, one of the attendants informed the High Priestess. We are about to take your belongings aboard and wondered if you would be wearing this for the journey.
No. Elun promises us a safe voyage. It is in Ashenvale where she cannot reveal what awaits.
With a grunt, Chandris saluted her. Judging by the pace of your packing, my news was even more out of date than I thought. I suspect it would be good for me to get my own gear aboard. We will be sailing very soon, will we not? The High Priestess smiled.
Yes, but only if that meets with your approval.
The sooner we get to Ashenvale, the sooner we send the Horde running, With that, Chandris saluted Tyrande and Malfurion, then marched off. Tyrande's smile turned into a fearful frown. She quickly dismissed the attendants and, when finally alone with her husband, said,
I truly cannot see what is happening in Ashenvale, Mal. I do not like that. But I still know that I have got to be there, and you need to be here. I cannot explain why.
No need. I will just grind my teeth and do as you say. Tyrande kissed the Archdruid.
Thank you for understanding.
Huh. You know I do not.
Then thank you for pretending.
With tremendous reluctance, she broke from him.
I must go.
I will not see you off. I promise.
Tyrande had earlier asked him not to be there when the ship sailed. Despite her assurance that Elune knew what had to be done, it was still at least as much a struggle for Tyrande to separate from him as it was Malfurion from her. They had already lost so many centuries in the past. And now, with mortality peering over their shoulders, it was harder than ever to contemplate being in two different lands, especially considering that they did not know what danger might await Tyrande. Danger in which Malfurion would be unable to intervene.
Oh, what news of the assassins? She asked as she departed.
Maiev has a theory involving the Worgen. I doubt its value, but at this point it would not surprise me to learn anything. That caused her to stop.
The Worgen?
I will follow through on it with Maiev. As I said, it is very likely nothing, but we will see. Go now. I will keep Darnassus in one piece while you are away, even if I am not you.
Thank you.
She left before either could find another excuse to delay the separation. Malfurion immediately tried to focus on something other than his wife. The murders were the most logical, not to mention urgent, choice. He had not revealed that Gerard had also indicated there was a need to speak to the Worgen, but Maiev's brother wanted to do it without his sister present. While the former guard captain had not said as much, his style of investigation was quite different from his sister's. Both were very determined and known for getting the task done. Gerard, though, preferred a less brash, more subtle approach, which was also more to Malfurion's tastes. And with all the chaos going on at the moment, whatever little calm could be maintained was more than for what the Archdruid could hope. He should have waited for Malfurion, but Gerard could not contain his impatience any longer. Nor did he think that he could keep his intentions hidden from Maiev. That was why Gerard was already on his way to the area where he knew that he would find the group of Worgen whom he had previously encountered. More important, he would find that one particular Worgen. Maiev had some other avenue of investigation that she wanted to pursue, and had taken Neva with her, so Gerard was able to slip away fairly easily. His sister did not entirely think him necessary to her work, but so long as he did nothing to interfere, anything he might accidentally discover, she would accept.
Someday, perhaps we will understand one another better,
Gerard thought as he neared the territory where he had last confronted the Worgen. He sensed the faint smell that he associated with the Worgen. A musky sweat. The scent was faint, but that did not mean that the Worgen were not nearby.
Night elf.
Even closer than I thought. Gerard turned to face the Worgen who had spoken. He did not recognize the markings, at least not as those of the one he sought.
What do you do here, again?
The Worgen growled.
So this is at least one of those from before.
That pleased Gerard, for it saved time in having to explain just who he was. There were enough other things that he might have to explain. I would like to talk with one of you. The one who was in charge the last time I was here. The Worgen cocked his head. He sniffed the air, and Gerard realized that the Gilnean was taking in the intruder's scent. perhaps even marking whether there was the sweat one associated with lying or fear.
I know of whom you speak. He'll not want to talk with you.
I would just like to have the chance. Let him say so, and I will leave. The Worgen's ears flattened and his brow furrowed. Finally, reluctantly, he gestured the direction Gerard had been heading.
That way. Not far.
When the lupine figure did not move, the night elf turned and started walking as indicated. Although he did not hear the Worgen behind him, he knew that the creature was following. They climbed a short hill, then descended the other side. Gerard could not help but feel that more eyes now watched him from beyond the surrounding trees. Without warning, another Worgen leapt into sight in front of them. Having expected something, Gerard did not even flinch as the newcomer first landed on all fours, then sleepily rose to face the night elf. It was the Worgen for whom he had been searching. The fur was unmistakable. What was also unmistakable was the Worgen's displeasure at Gerard's arrival.
You. You shouldn't have ever come back here.
To the Worgen who had led the night elf to this place, he growled,
And you should know better.
The other Gilnean's ears flattened, and a slight whining sound escaped him. The second Worgen dismissed him with a curt wave that displayed for Gerard the long, so very sharp claws. The chief Worgen then turned his gaze toward the trees. Ears pricking up, he let out a slight snarl. Gerard heard nothing, but a few seconds later, the Worgen relaxed slightly.
We're alone now, the Worgen announced with confidence.
The night elf did not ask how the other could be certain. He trusted in the Worgen's senses.
I appreciate your talking with me. I've not said I would. You should have known the last time you were here that you weren't wanted.
As he spoke, the Worgen's muzzle neared Gerard's face. One snap from the savage jaws could have easily ended the conversation, provided the Gilnean could have accomplished that before Gerard's sword impaled him. That the night elf kept the blade at his side and not in his hand in no manner gave the Worgen advantage. Gerard's reflexes had not slowed that much over the millennia. As if sensing that he could not cow the night elf, the Worgen pulled his muzzle back slightly. The two eyed each other for a moment.
I am sorry, Gerard finally replied calmly.
I came alone, so as to not disturb matters any more than necessary. If I can speak with you for a moment, you will not hear from me again. The Worgen snarled, but finally nodded.
Ask what you want, quickly.
My name is Gerard Shadowsong.
I care nothing for your name. Ask your damned questions.
The former guard captain nodded. You did not say anything about being the one to rescue me from that trap.
Which should have been enough to tell you I wanted nothing more to do with it. It was a moment of weakness.
But in the Worgen's tone there was the first hint of sympathy.
Oh, I couldn't leave you there, though.
For which I will always owe you. But tell me, why were you there in the first place? The Gilnean looked away.
We know of the spellcaster's murders. We know that we are believed by some to be the culprits. My lord ordered otherwise, but some of us decided to seek answers ourselves.
And did you find anything? The Worgen glared at the heavens.
Yes. We found we'd die quite easily, too, when snared by traps like the one that caught you.
Gerard started.
One of yours perished. The trap was not exactly the same. As with yours, it was all but invisible. Only the telltale sign of withered foliage where the trap was set revealing its presence. That was how I discovered the one that caught you. This trait we learned, unfortunately, in retrospect from the loss we suffered.
I am sorry.
His companion nodded in acceptance of Gerard's sympathy.
We could not free her in time. Like yours, it first tortured, yes, but then it made certain that if one managed to escape, a second element would seize the heart from within.
He bared his teeth in remembrance of the foul deed.
We found later that her heart had literally exploded. By Elune. You see now why I did what I could to release you. Where did this happen?
The Worgen again bared his teeth.
Not all that far from where you met your disaster. That was why I was near. I wanted to study the place where she died to see if there was any clue that would help us avenge her.
And was there?
The only clue was the trap that nearly did you in, Night Elf.
The Gilnean's ears flattened.
There's no more I can tell you.
The finality in the Gilnean's tone made it clear that Gerard should not try to push. The Night Elf understood.
I appreciate what you have told me. It should help.
I doubt it. Your sister seems set on blaming us.
Maiev will see that what needs to be done will be done, Gerard replied somewhat defensively. She has always upheld her duty to our people.
But we are not your people.
With that, the Worgen stepped back to depart. Gerard started to do the same, but paused. If you think of anything more, you know my name. The Worgen snorted, then hesitated.
And mine's Edric.
I trust you with that on the assumption that you'll keep it to yourself.
Of course.
The Gilnean vanished among the trees. Gerard stood there for a moment, wondering whether he had accomplished anything. The Worgen's words milled around in his head as he tried to make sense of it all. Tried to make sense of it all, and prayed that no other Highborn would be assassinated before he could. Chapter 21. A Line Drawn. The scouts came rushing back to Haldrissa, who suddenly discovered that she had dozed off in the saddle. Fortunately, neither Danaea nor any of the other officers noticed, as they were more caught up in the startled looks of the returning sentinels. Haldrissa made a quick count and came up too short. Yet although the scouts rode with much urgency, they did not move as if the horde were on their heels. Unfortunately, the news they brought might as well have been such. Silverwing had fallen. The scouts had only sketchy information. It was not until a few moments later that those who could much better attest to the disaster arrived. The once proud Silverwing sentinels had been reduced to perhaps a quarter of their strength, and many of those were wounded. Among their survivors was the acting commander, Su'ura, who related the terrifying tale of the outpost's fall. Haldrissa grimly listened to the news, all the while thinking that the end of the world as she knew it had finally come. Even the cataclysm had not touched her this way. Silverwing was gone. The horde was sweeping over Ashenvale, with Garrosh Hellscream himself leading the way.
"We should ride to meet them now," snapped Danaea. "They will never expect us to be so close already. We will catch them by surprise."
Several of the other younger sentinels voiced their support. Haldrissa noticed that Su'ura, no coward, was not among them. Nor was the scout who stood near her, and the senior commander would have expected such a one to be the first to demand they turn and fight.
"No," Haldrissa quietly announced. "We will not."
Danaea gaped.
"But the whole purpose of our march was to meet up with Silverwing in order to better secure a line of defense against the Horde."
There was more to it than that, but the point is, Silverwing is no more. That changes everything. We cannot properly set up a good line of defense in this region, and attacking the Horde right now would play into their hands. You heard her report, and you know what we ourselves experienced. The Horde has new strategies, and if Garrosh Hellscream is at the forefront, they will have more to throw at us than what we have seen thus far.
You are not suggesting we turn back.
Danaya's arguing was bordering on insubordination, but under the circumstances, Haldrissa forgave her. Only as far as just west of the river. We cross and then take up a position not far from it. Let them struggle across. We will better bring them down as they try. It was clear that Danaya and some of the others still looked more interested in supposedly surprising the Horde by moving forward and attacking, but they obeyed orders. Su'ura and Ileana organized the survivors. Those too weak were given mounts.
They turned about and headed back. Haldrissa had Danaya take command of a squad that would protect the rear of the column. While outspoken, Haldrissa's second would make certain that she followed through with her instructions and kept everyone safe from possible Horde scouts seeking to pick off stragglers.
They made good time, in part because, having just come from that direction, they knew the path very well. Recalling the incursions into Alliance territory by the orcs, the senior commander still sent scouts ahead just in case. They faced no threat at the river and crossed easily. Haldrissa chose a location that would give them an open area in front of them that would make any army charging toward their position easy targets for the archers. She then set about dividing her fighters along the region. Day passed into night and into day again. Having fought the Horde at all hours during the course of her career, Haldrissa had become quite used to the daytime, despite being of a nocturnal race. She sent messengers to the nearest other outposts and was rewarded with answers from both. The contact enabled the Alliance to build a better line along the western side of the river. During all that time, there were no active signs of the Horde, and although Danaya pressed for Haldrissa to let her take a scouting party to the enemy's location, the senior commander refused. Yet they all wondered why the Horde had not followed up its victory at Silverwing by pushing forward and meeting the sentinels head-on. Su'ura could offer no details from the attack that shed any light, and none of her staff's suggestions satisfied Haldrissa. Garrosh Hellscream was waiting for something, likely some opportunity, and the defenders would not know what it was until he finally moved. Another day passed, then two. Haldrissa finally gave in to her second's constant request and let her take a band to cautiously seek the Horde's lines. It was not until night that Danaya returned. To Haldrissa's relief, her party remained intact. However, the younger sentinel's puzzled look did not sit well with the commanding officer.
"They are gathered, as if ready to march," Danaya said. "I have never seen such an army. Legions of restive orc warriors, some on foot, others riding great wolves. Row upon row of tauren armed with axes or spears and chanting to their guiding spirits. Goblin shredders in numbers never seen, howling trolls who adorned their armor with skulls. And more, and more."
She took a deep breath and finally explained the cause of her confusion.
"But even though many of their warriors are clearly eager for bloodshed, their commanders are holding them back."
"You saw their strength."
"They have put together a powerful force," the other reluctantly answered. "Enough to crush us.
And they are waiting.
Did you see anything else?"
"I saw the goblins working on their infernal mechanisms, including some wagons that looked to be the source of that foul-smelling mist. Other than that, nothing out of the ordinary."
Haldrissa recalled more of Su'ura's report.
"Catapults? A few. The same type we have seen in the past. Not very accurate things."
That dismissive description did not sit well with the veteran officer, who well remembered Sa'ura's words concerning the near perfection with which the boulders had been lobbed into Silverwing. If these were indeed the same catapults, then the orcs had trained their crews well. In fact, better than ever. The catapults somewhat explained the reason the Horde might not yet have attacked. Such heavy equipment always slower to bring to the front. Yet that still did not satisfy Haldrissa. Either Garrosh had the expectation of more troops arriving to strengthen his force, or he waited for the sentinels to do something. But what could that be? She asked herself again. The growing numbers on the Horde's side forced Haldrissa to make a decision that she had not wanted. Sending messengers back, she called in every available sentinel to be brought up to the lines. The Alliance had to hold here. If they allowed the orcs to make any deeper headway into Western Ashenvale, they risked losing the entire region. To her surprise, it was not the reinforcements she had summoned who first arrived. Rather, it was a herald, riding like the wind. At first, Haldrissa feared that somehow Garrosh had gotten around her line and had attacked the outposts behind, but the rider looked anything but horrified as he jumped off his panting nightsaber. "Help has arrived," he called to her, heedless of the fact that others heard his triumphant shout. "The Horde will pay for Silverwing." "What are you saying?" Haldrissa demanded as Danaea and others gathered. "Are the reinforcements from the western outposts on their way already?" "They and many more, Commander. They and many more. Our ships landed this morning. The others have already disembarked and pushed victoriously through the Horde stronghold of Zoramgar Outpost, where they met with little resistance." "Disembarked? What do you mean? Who? Where are these reinforcements from?" "Darnassus! Your messenger made it to Darnassus!" "Aradria?" Danaea blurted. "She lives?" Some of the rider's joy momentarily faded. Only long enough to tell all she knew. Then her spirit rose to join the Mother Moon. "Brave," Haldrissa remarked. "She will be honored. I will make certain 10 orcs pay for her life," growled Danaea. The commander had no time for bravado. Battle had a way of reducing a warrior's desire to simply surviving. To the rider, she asked, "And does General Chandris lead them?"
"Nay, though she has come too."
The male night elf could not keep from grinning. "It is the High Priestess herself who heads the expedition." "The High Priestess?" All around them, sentinels looked stunned, awed. Haldrissa could scarcely believe what she heard.
"Tyronda Whisperwind is in Ashenvale." "Yes, and soon she will be among us. So she promises."
The startling news could not help but lighten the sentinels' hearts. The High Priestess, the voice of Ilune on Azeroth, not only had heard the peril of her servants, but had come to personally lead them to victory over the Horde.
"The orcs were fools to wait," Danaea said with relish. "You were right to have us hold, Commander. Now they will pay for Silverwing. Pay 100-fold.
Haldrissa, too, felt her confidence rising. Garrosh Hellscream was a foe with whom to be reckoned, but against Tyronda Whisperwind, who had some 10 millennia more experience in war, the orc surely had no chance. Final victory, Haldrissa told herself, would be the Alliance's. And yet, she could not help glancing toward the direction of the enemy, and wondering. "She should be in Ashenvale by now," Malfurion thought sourly. "She is in Ashenvale, while I go around hunting shadows." That was not exactly the truth. Maiev and her brother were doing much of the investigating, while Malfurion spent most of his time trying to get the Highborn to see reason. The Highborn were becoming angrier and angrier at the lack of success. They had begun to do some investigations of their own, especially Varden. Unfortunately, that had put them at odds with many of the people of Darnassus. Malfurion had already had to step in once to stop bloodshed. Even Morden no longer had much patience. He and Malfurion stood at the edge of the Highborn encampment, separating after 3 fruitless hours of debate on the best course of action. "I have tried to restrain the younger ones, like Varden, enough, Archdruid. I find I no longer care to stop them." Malfurion remembered all too well how close Varden had come to unleashing his magic on the Night Elves angrily surrounding him. They had not taken kindly to his imperious questioning and not so subtle threats when he had been asking after the 2 murders.
"We are doing the best anyone can. Maiev
had better show results. I understand her reputation. I fail to see anything that supports it. She has badgered us over and over on a variety of leads, some of which infer that perhaps the assassins are among our own. If this is the best she can do for this matter..." "She has been questioning everyone, Mordant. No one could be more thorough." Malfurion sighed. "I will talk with her, and see if there is anything else. At least her brother has some tact, not that he has been any more efficient. Still, he shows proper respect." The Archdruid refrained from commenting. Gerard did indeed have more tact. "We will solve this."
"As you say," the Highborn concluded, his tone doubtful. "Fare you well."
Malfurion nodded, then headed toward Darnassus. However, he had not gotten far when he sensed that he was again not alone. He glanced over his shoulder but saw nothing. Malfurion turned his attention back to his trek. The armored figure that now stood in the path ahead had her cloak drawn around her, turning her into a dark, ominous image that surely even Illidan had found daunting at times.
"Archdruid Malfurion," Maiev greeted him.
He glanced over his shoulder at where he had left the Highborn. Malfurion and Maiev were uncomfortably close.
"What reason brings you out here?"
"A question or two concerning the assassinations that I need Varden or his master to answer. I think it might clear something up in my mind."
"You have found something?" She exhaled.
"I would rather not say until I know how it turns out."
Malfurion accepted that, but was still uncertain as to the wisdom of her current intentions. "You must speak with them." Maiev chuckled.
"Have I been annoying them?"
"This is no laughing matter." Gerard's sister sobered.
"No, not where the Highborn are concerned. You are right."
"Is this questioning necessary?"
"I do nothing without reason.
And you need not fear that I will upset them so much that they will go running into Darnassus. I heard about Varden. That one is going to be a problem."
"He will be fine if this all gets settled."
She frowned, but answered, "Yes, I suppose he will." "Be cautious, Maiev."
"I will be."
With a slight bow, Gerard's sister moved on. Malfurion watched her for a few seconds. Maiev did not look back. He shook his head. "Driven by duty, even if it means walking into danger." Malfurion was suddenly struck by immense guilt. It was in great part due to him that she had become so obsessive with her tasks. She had watched over his brother for millennia because Malfurion had shown Illidan mercy. The Archdruid felt tremendous responsibility for Maiev. He did not want to see her suffer more than she already had in her life. And if she baited the Highborn too much while questioning them, there was a very good chance that she would suffer greatly. Alone again, Malfurion welcomed the tranquility of the forest. The urge to simply settle down somewhere and meditate, even go to the Emerald Dream for a time, grew stronger. but not strong enough. The cataclysm had created many situations requiring the druids' efforts, and Malfurion was needed to guide those efforts. More important, however, was the fact that Tyranda even now moved to lead the Night Elves and their allies against the Horde. If there was even the slightest chance that she might need his help, Malfurion was willing to sacrifice himself if necessary. The local trees greeted him. They were grateful for his appearance, in great part due to the Highborn living so nearby. The spellcasters made the forest wary. The trees especially could sense the inherent danger in their magic. The archdruid calmed the trees as best he could. However, there was little he could tell them other than that the Highborn would not be casting great spells around them. Malfurion had promised to treat Mordant's people with respect, and part of that meant allowing them to practice their craft on occasion, but only in a limited way, and only in a designated area closer to their encampment, where the druids had set safeguards in place. The archmage kept most of his people under control, but as Malfurion knew, some of the more ambitious, like Varden, had to be watched more. Even here, Malfurion could sense the residue of some arcane spell. Once the murders were solved, the archdruid would have to have a word with Mordant about Varden's grasp on where the line was drawn. Malfurion continued walking as he communed with the trees and other forest life. He had to return to the temple to see to some of the more mundane aspects of leadership. There were those seeking an audience, requisitions to confirm, things that as an ordinary druid he would never have had to deal. It made him feel all the more guilty to think of the millennia that Tyranda had dutifully worked to see to the best for their people, while he had been away. Someone else approached. Frowning, Malfurion sighted two grim sentinels. "Hail to you, Archdruid Malfurion," the senior of the two greeted. "What is it?" "We have report of another assassination." The news struck Malfurion dumb for a moment. He stood there, waiting to be told they were in error, but realizing quickly that it was something that he had been expecting. "Where?" "In the deep woods farther north from here. The one called Neva sent the news to us, then went to find Maiev." Maiev. It only stood to reason that she should also be informed. And yet the archdruid hesitated to go after her. He had promised the Highborn that these dread crimes would be solved. Another death would only cause things to boil over beyond even his control. "Neva will eventually inform Maiev. I need to make a study of the scene as soon as possible." Having satisfied himself in regards to the notifying of Gerard's sister, Malfurion indicated to the pair to lead the way. The sentinels turned. At first, out of respect for the archdruid, they kept a slower, more even pace. Only when Malfurion purposely took a step or two ahead of them did they finally seem to realize that he preferred speed over propriety. Although he had a vague notion as to where they journeyed, he was glad that his guides knew the exact location. Malfurion had to assume either that the Highborn had been lured out here, or that, like the one Gerard had discovered, the victim had been moved after death. Even still, his impatience swelled. Eyeing yet another hill to climb, he finally asked, "How much longer?" "According to what we were told, it should be just over this rise, Archdruid." "Good." He picked up his pace again, moving ahead of the sentinels. The trees around him suddenly shook with warning. The Archdruid glanced up at them, reading their fear. However, it was not fear for themselves, but rather him. He raised a hand, already casting. At the same time, Malfurion shouted, "Get back! There is a—" He felt as if flames had burst all around him, although he could see nothing. Behind him, Malfurion heard the sentinel's scream. A horrific crackling sound assailed his ears, and he suddenly felt not only as if his body were on fire, but also as if his skin were being flayed. Somehow Malfurion managed to take a step forward. The agony increased, but for some reason the Archdruid knew that his best hope was to keep pushing on. In the back of his mind, he sensed that the trees were urging him. The cries of his escorts had faded away. The Archdruid could do nothing for them. First, he had to save himself. If there was any chance of healing the pair, he could then try. Otherwise, they were all surely dead. He managed another step. The pain lessened ever so slightly. Through the struggle, Malfurion heard an angry voice. So in pain was he that even had it been someone with whom he was familiar, he could not have identified it. The Archdruid only knew that the speaker was very near. Then, for just a brief moment, the voice became very clear, and even closer. "Why do you not just die already?" Something struck Malfurion on the head. Chapter 22. Ritual. Gen watched his people continue their preparations to depart. It was with a heavy heart that he had decided to take this course of action, but there was no more reason to stay near Darnassus, and doing so only deepened the shame of the Worgen's rejection, at least in his eyes. Varian's disappearance after the hunt had come as a great blow to the Gilnean king. After the obvious bond that had developed, the other monarch's abrupt behavior had eradicated Gen's last hope that the Worgen would be accepted by the Alliance. With that hope gone, Gen's choice had been clear. Edric was nowhere to be found, but otherwise the rest of his aides had the situation well in hand. Another day or two and there would be nothing left to mark the encampment's former occupants. The hair on the back of his neck suddenly stood on end. Someone was behind him. As with many Worgen, Gen more often than not remained in his lupine form. He felt stronger, younger that way. When human, the king felt the aches of age. But being Worgen now meant that the one behind him had failed if his attempt had been to sneak up on Gen. Moving with the swiftness and grace of the Worgen shape, he turned to meet the potential threat with claws and teeth. But instead of doing battle, Gen found himself standing in utter bewilderment.
"Varian Rin?"
Varian could not blame his counterpart for being so stunned. The Lord of Stormwind himself felt like an absolute fool, or at least someone who certainly did not know his own mind. Although on the one hand the hunt had served to do as Malfurion had surely desired, it had also revealed to Varian the utter inconsistencies of many of his own beliefs and prejudices. Suddenly overwhelmed, Varian had chosen the one recourse he felt open to him at that moment. He had retreated in the face of the Worgen's honor of him, an honor he felt he did not deserve, and had plunged deeper into the forest, his destination not even known to him. With Anduin gone, Varian had felt no desire to return to Darnassus. His quarters, while built with the Night Elves' love of nature in mind, had still been a part of a city, part of his life as a king, not as a man. The vibrancy of the forest, with its abundance of life, of freedom, had given him some respite, but had not eased his confused mind as much as he had hoped. Instead, Varian had discovered too late that the quiet and calm around him only better served to bring into focus all his misjudgments and prejudices. He had lost all track of time, night coming and day returning without his caring. With day had come the knowledge that Varian could not simply abandon everything for the purity of the forest. For his love, for his son, for his people, and for his hopes for redemption, Varian had come to a decision. It had to do much with the realization that there were others who had struggled hard with the darker side of their nature, perhaps even in a way that he never had. The Worgen. And so, after returning to his quarters to quell the growing anxieties of his retinue, and finding that Malfurion had already assured them that their ruler was merely indisposed, he had sought out Ghen Greymane once more.
"You left," the Gilnean monarch said with some condemnation in his tone. "We honored you, and you simply left. I sought word of you from Darnassus, but the Archdruid only said not to worry, that you needed time to yourself."
The wisdom of the Night Elf continued to amaze Varian. "He was right. I had much to consider. And when I was done considering all of it, I knew that I had to find you and your people again.
You want something of us? What? We've nothing. No land, no gold. You have everything. Everything."
"Not everything. I need your help, Ghen." The other king stared without understanding. Considering their previous encounters, Varian could not blame him.
"How can I possibly help you?" the Worgen muttered.
"I know something about the Worgen curse and the ferocity of it. But you and yours control that urge, not give in to it."
"Ah."
Ghen not only nodded in understanding, but even showed some sympathy rather than disdain.
"I always wondered how anyone could survive what you did and stay intact inside."
"I didn't." Varian felt uncomfortable even speaking of it. "Tell me what you did."
"It's not as simple as that, my friend. You have to be willing to look deep within yourself, find your balance."
"I'll fight 100 orcs barehanded if that's what's needed." The Worgen laughed sadly.
"Trust me from experience. That might be simpler. We lost several before we were shown the correct ritual by the Night Elf Belisra Starbreeze. They were consumed by the curse, became beasts without hearts, without souls."
Ghen looked off into his memories.
"We had to put them down. And even now, the ritual is still fraught with danger. Now and then there are those who do not survive it."
Varian was not dissuaded. "Better I die trying than to keep on like I am, Ghen. I've lost my wife, and now my son. Anduin may be gone forever, and it's because of me."
"I lost a son as well,"
the King of Gilneas murmured.
"Although Liam is gone forever, killed saving my life from a poisoned arrow fired by the leader of the Forsaken, the Banshee Queen Sylvanas, when we sought to retake Gilneas City."
Ghen shook his head.
"I don't downplay what's happened between you and your boy. 'Tis a terrible, terrible thing, whether by death or the separation of Miles, if permanent. I know your loss there, Varian."
The Worgen leader peered over his shoulder at his people, some of whom had paused at sight of the recognizable newcomer in their midst. His brow furrowed in deep thought.
"We can guide you into the ritual, but how you come through it depends much upon you. To conquer yourself, your own worst foe, requires tranquility, balance, and last and by no means easy, ultimate mastery of your fury. 3 struggles, not 1.
3 or 100
I'll face what needs to be faced. Show me, Gen.
The Worgen nodded. May your ability be as great as your determination.
Gen did not lead him among the other Gilneans, but rather skirted to the south and then east. However, as they walked, several other Worgen left their tasks and began following.
Why are they following?
The ritual needs to be overseen by more than just one.
The Lord of Stormwind frowned. How do they know what we're planning?
You gave no sign.
Gen's lupine features showed some slight wry amusement.
None that you saw.
A few more Worgen, both male and female, joined in the group trailing behind the pair. They moved in silence, seeming like bearers at a funeral. Varian's hand instinctively shifted nearer to his knife, but did not actually touch it.
Gen led him to a small clearing surrounded by trees whose branches reminded Varian of grasping fingers. The Gilnean ruler guided his charge to the center of the clearing.
This is where we've made do since our arrival, Gen explained.
The clearing itself appeared unremarkable save for three simple wells sunk on the opposite side from where they had entered. The fact that those wells were here signified to Varian that they had some importance to what was to take place. That was verified a moment later by the sudden emergence from the woods behind the wells of three druids.
At first, Varian expected Malfurion to step out as well, but only the trio, two males and a female, moved toward the wells and the Worgen. He did not recognize any of them other than as night elves. They wore solemn expressions and eyed the Worgen as if looking for something.
Who is it to be?
The middle one, his blue hair bound in two long braids trailing nearly to his waist and a smaller one thrusting upward from the back of his head, asked of Gen. The Gilnean ruler indicated his counterpart.
This one, Lyros Swiftwind. I give you Varian Rin.
The druids looked startled.
Lyros muttered,
But he is no Worgen.
Yet, still he suffers as we did before attaining balance,
Gen explained.
The fury within him is no less than that of any of us, possibly even more.
Please, step forward, the female requested.
Varian obeyed. The three druids each placed a hand on the king's shoulders, then closed their eyes. They studied the Lord of Stormwind so for a moment before opening their eyes and withdrawing their hands. Lyros looked at his companions, who nodded to the monarchs.
We see it now,
he said to Varian.
Welcome, Varian Rin. We are honored with your presence and, as keepers of these wells, we'll do what we can for you, though I think it best that Gen Greymane be your guide for this.
I'd prefer that, Varian replied.
I'll be glad to, Gen added.
The other male druid, his short, narrow beard and closer-cut hair both green, extended his palm. In it Varian saw a single, long, silvery leaf that tapered at the point.
Take this. Eat it. It is a moon leaf, a symbol of both nature and the Mother Moon. It will help prepare your mind for the ritual.
Varian took it without question. He expected the leaf to be bitter, but instead it had a soft, soothing texture and proved easy to swallow once chewed.
Now, you must drink from each of the wells.
With Gen beside him, Varian followed the druids to the first of the three wells. Here the second of the two males took over once more.
I am Talron of the Wild, and this is the Well of Tranquility, the druid said, handing Varian a small mug filled with what simply looked like water.
What you drink now will help you rekindle the peace and joy lost so early in your life.
Varian took the mug and calmly swallowed the contents. When he returned the mug, the druid bowed his head. Lyros gestured toward the second well. Gen looked a little surprised.
He's to drink from all three at once? For his journey, yes. We believe it must be so.
At the second well, the female druid, her green hair flowing behind her, served Varian.
I am Vassandra Stormclaw, and this is the Well of Balance. What you drink will keep your mind and body as one, thus enabling you to stand with both parts unified for the struggle you take on.
The contents tasted much the same to Varian, who thus far felt no different from either mug of water. As he handed back the mug, the lead druid indicated the third and final well.
I am Lyros Swiftwind, the night elf said, and this is the Well of Fury.
The druid handed Varian the last mug. What you drink will enhance the first two mugs you took, and also build within you the strength you need to confront and, hopefully, command that which most risks this ritual ending in failure. Lyros did not explain further. The King of Stormwind downed the contents, then waited expectantly. The lead druid nodded to the worgen leader.
Gen Greymane, you know what must be done from here on.
I do. Follow me, Varian.
As they stepped from the druids, Varian suddenly felt as if all his senses had begun to heighten. In doing so, they enabled him to notice some unsettling details he had missed concerning the area. Many of the tree trunks had scars that looked suspiciously as if some beast had madly slashed at them again and again. There were also areas where the ground had been churned up, though not so recently that there was not grass growing atop most of those places. He also smelled the scent of dried blood.
Back in Gilneas, where my people were the first worgen to go through the ritual, there were those who required more effort to come to grips with themselves than others,
Gen explained, as if aware of what Varian was noticing.
We learned hard from that. Very hard sometimes. When our journey brought us to Darnassus, we planned this place accordingly, and it served us thus far.
The worgen leader gestured to the others. They spread around the clearing, forming a loose circle. Varian estimated how many steps it would take for one of them to close with him. Enough that he could draw his knife, but not much longer than that.
We shall sit here.
Gen smoothly positioned himself with legs crossed, then waited while Varian did the same. Now what? I close my eyes? That simple?
Gen's ears flattened. If you try, then it's that simple. If you give up already, not simple at all.
Frowning deeper, Varian shut his eyes. Immediately his other trained senses heightened. He heard not only his own breathing, but Gen's. The worgen's musky smell wafted under his nostrils. A light wind grazed Varian's skin and slightly tousled his hair.
Your senses are very acute. You could be worgen,
he heard Gen say with some astonishment. Then, more neutral, the other king began,
Focus. The water from the three wells will aid, but you are the one who must find where to begin. For that, you must look into your memories.
For what? When Gen answered, it was as if he spoke from much farther away.
For those points most relevant to your life, and the choices you made because of them, for good or ill. Start with the oldest you recall, and do more than just remember them. Relive them. Be aware why you did what you did, and what that means to you.
Eyes still shut, Varian shifted uneasily.
There's no point in going back and doing that.
Then there's no point in continuing,
Gen returned, seeming even farther away. His voice also took on a whispery quality, as if the wind carried it. Varian grunted. All right, I'll do it. Gritting his teeth, the former gladiator focused on his past, trying to summon